time for our book club. This month we've been reading Mary Costello's award-winning debut novel, Academy Street. The book tells the story of Tess from her time growing up in the west of Ireland in the 1940s and then her time as an immigrant in New York City. With me in studio, author Sinead Moriarty, Ger Colleran, columnist with the Irish Daily Star, Natasha Fennell, director of Stillwater Communications, and author and lecturer Eivor Walsh. Now, before we discuss the book, let's hear an extract. It's read now by the author Mary Costello, describing Tess's arrival in America.
Claire's husband, Peter, a tall, handsome Irish-American, was waiting at Idlewild Airport. Shyly, she climbed into his car and he whisked her up to Peekskill on the Hudson, where they had taken a summer house. Everything was different. The highway, the sky, the distant forests. The vast country, clean and green and perfect. The trucks thundering past with huge chrome wheels and invisible drivers high up in cabs. For a while, she forgot herself. The trees are juniper, Peter said. His teeth were white and gleaming. Juniper, she said to herself. Beautiful word, beautiful trees. They stopped at a turnpike and paid a toll, just to use the road.
And that's Mary Costello reading that extract from Academy Street, the title of the book, also the name of the street where Tess lived in New York. Ger Colleran, what's this story about? It's a shortish book, 168 pages.
Yes, and might I say it's a very enjoyable book and it's wonderfully written. There's a lot of texture in this book, and I've said to your researcher earlier that I think this book would be even better, perhaps, like some wine to be left again for 6 months and reread. I think there's a lot more to be got from it. To be taken from it. It's a book about this lady from 40s, born 40s Ireland, lost her mother tragically, and eventually ends up in New York. And there's a whole series.
A fairly oppressive father as well.
Yeah, oppressive father. But, I mean, not just the father. The men come out terribly out of this book in many respects. But it's not for the faint-hearted, this book. This is a book of utter and total, almost universal misery from start to finish. And you'd want to have your wits about you.
Yes, she eventually leaves the west of Ireland, comes to Dublin, trains, emigrates, has a child, and then a difficult relationship with the child, and then there's an ending, we'll say. We won't give it away. Natasha, what did you make of it?
Well, you just said it. All of that crammed into 160 pages, which I found really challenging as a read. I felt that Ger is right. It was beautifully written, but in places, I suppose the first thing to say is the opening of the book is really beautiful, and that's where I was getting excited about reading this book. Also, knowing there was only 160 pages because I like short books, but and it was the opening of the mother's funeral and what was happening at that, and then that theme runs right throughout the book. The theme of having lost her mother, the loneliness she felt when she went to the States, the loneliness she felt after this lover that she had spent a night with, the loneliness she felt after not having friends, the loss of all her family. But I suppose in essence, as a book, it didn't work for me. I felt there was far too much crammed into it. I felt we didn't get to know any of the characters. I didn't even feel I knew Tess. It felt for me more like an account of something rather than an actual exploration of a relationship. For example, I think she could have opened up the whole thing, relationship between herself and her son, for example, in the States. That could have been a very powerful story, and seeing the backdrop of 1960s America or 1970s America over there, the backdrop of New York and what that was like. It was an immigrant story as well. So there was another story of emigration and how that impacts on all of us. But I felt that she touched on so many different massive themes and characters, but we didn't actually get to know any of them.
And Eivor, themes as well touched on by other writers, other Irish writers?
Yes, that's what as I was reading it, I mean, I'm agreeing with the comments on both sides, because as I was reading it, I was thinking, say, the opening, the beautiful opening, John McGahern's memoir, The Death of His Mother, again, just as well written. I mean, the style is really good.
Yeah.
Then America, I was thinking of Brooklyn, I was thinking of, say, Maeve Brennan's writing.
Colm Tobin's Brooklyn.
The
Dublin,
that's
yeah.
the one that's coming out just as a film. And then I was thinking of Maeve Brennan, who wrote about sort of, you know, the Irish in New York. And then Colin McCann at the end comes in very strongly. And I'm not saying, I'm saying these in a good way, that they remind me of them. They're not derivative of them, but it covers the whole world. A little bit of Edna O'Brien as well, with, you know, the father, the kind of tyrannical and, well, I think grief-stricken and grief-maddened father. I mean, he was, you know, painted in a kind of a few little touches.
That brooding figure. They were very good, though, because explode at any moment.
But you knew he was, the man was in pain and wounded, you know, and yeah, you had all these echoes of other writers, but in the good way, in the kind of useful way.
Sinead, what did you think of it, Sinead Moriarty?
I loved it. I mean, you know, it's 50,000 words, which is really half the size of a normal book. And I think it is phenomenal what she achieved in those 50,000 words. And really, what I loved about this book is that you can really see that every single word matters. It's also quite unusual to have a main character who's such an introvert. And I found that very interesting about Tess. You know, she's a very quiet person. She's a shy person. She's very introverted. And a lot of the book really takes place inside of her head. And yet, for somebody who is this way, she makes a lot of very brave decisions. She goes to Dublin to do nursing. She goes to New York. She raises a child on her own. And so I really enjoy that kind of contrast, you know, because some of the reviews have said, you know, she's kind of a passive person, but I don't think she is a passive person at all. In fact, I think she actually, you know, again, makes very courageous decisions and sort of embraces life. Now, unfortunately, you know, as the others have said, I mean, life throws her a lot of curveballs and a lot of tragedy. And it's a incredibly painful book to read, but I absolutely loved it. I think it's phenomenal. And I, you know, as I said, it's not easy to make every single sentence matter, and Mary has done that.
Natasha, what about the language that she uses?
Yeah, I that's an aspect of it that I really enjoyed. I think she's using Hiberno English in a lot of it, and she's from Galway, so I can only assume that a lot of the English she's using is how Connemara, I grew up in Connemara, how we speak English and how we've spoken English during the year. So there's kind of a direct translation from Irish to English in a lot of the language. And again, you'll see this in some of the authors that Ava just mentioned. So, for example, she uses sentences like, you know, he came here before me, Hanuk Shamach room, you know, room. The structure of the sentences in places is very lovely. It actually reminded me, and some people love it or hate it, again, of how Michael McDonough, the playwright, writes in his Beauty Queen of Lean-An, you know. So that element of it, see, my whole issue with this book is not at all in the how it's written. It's that I felt there were so many themes in it, and I felt we could have gone a deeper. I wanted the deeper experience. I wanted to really feel a bit more. I felt the end of the book was so fast, so many happens, and I counted the pages, like in 20 pages, so much happens, and it's a lot for a reader to take on.
I think real life, though, contains within it a lot of strands that you never actually get to follow through on. Mm. You know, there's a lot of things there left unexamined in one's life. And I think that this reflects that. What interested me about this particular book is the massively negative comment that is there about her relationships with other people and her and the cycle of misery that it suggests will continue interminably into the future.
Yeah, but not just losing her mother at an early age, also seeing, I think, the corpse of a young traveller child, right. That, again, it sent her into a kind of a deep silence for many months, if not years.
Right. The thing I noticed is America had this, I mean, I think someone says it at one point, for all the characters who go there, it kind of goes against a lot of kind of Irish-American literature, for herself, for her brother Oliver, even for her aunt, her sister Claire, who won't give away what happens to her. America is kind of brings a sort of, and I suppose their mother had died young, and I think isn't there a suspicion or a fear of TB that this is like the family has this as a possible hereditary thing. But I thought the US experience, in fact, was quite a negative one. But there's a kind of
liberating to the extent that she felt able to keep her child, something that would not have been possible for her, say, had she been back here.
But the lives there are quite blighted, and I thought I was very struck by something Natasha said, which is that I think this is beautifully written. I've never read anything else by her. I'll read more of her because she really can write. Mm-hmm. I found Tess's passivity really frustrating.
Yes.
I think what way you put it, Natasha, is like her life happened to her and we observe it. Now, I know Sinead said the opposite, and, you know, I suppose we're all reading it in different ways. I just thought her, like, say, that big encounter with her son, and I won't give away its content because it's a big deal. It comes as a big shock what happens. But I'm thinking a huge life did just happen to her. I like a central character who engages a little more. And say in Brooklyn, Eilish seems a bit kind of passive, but then, you know, she has to make like really fast decisions at the end.
But that's what I mean, Ava. It felt to me more like an account of her life as opposed to the actual telling of the story. And I felt that she could have showed me a little bit more rather than telling me. So, for example, she would say she had very quick observations. So one thread talks to us about how she feels her son is moving away from her. And then one day she looks at a photograph of the father of her son and all of a sudden forgives him in that one split second. So rather than it's very literal as opposed to telling us how these experiences came about. And so therefore she was again touching on something, but I wanted to stay on that moment and explore it a little bit more.
Well, I think it was a wonderful privilege to be given that length of time to live inside somebody's head, so introverted as this person is. But I come back to one thing that I would like to, maybe Mary Costello will deal with it in further work, but there isn't one single male character in these in this book that is any way charming at all. Except for the partner or the so-called partner.
Well, she was
or the
utterly
border
captivated
of her
by
aunt.
Him, Sinead. Do you find that was maybe a bit implausible?
No, because again, you know, she's a shy, introverted girl and she has this incredible passion inside her for this boy, for this one-night stand. But see, I think what's very interesting is that I think what I loved about it was that she is such an introvert. And in a way, I know what you're saying about she lets life happen to her. But in fact, she does do a lot of, as I said, you know, very, she does do a lot of courageous things. But also, the only thing that I found I had a slight problem with was that she encourages her brother, younger brother Oliver, to come over. And then he comes over and then he sort of disappears and there doesn't seem to be any huge search for him. And it was really bothering me. So I actually asked Mary Costello about it. And she said that she just felt that Tess had so much going on. You know, she was a single mother. She was working full time and she does look for him at one point. But she felt, the writer Mary Costello felt, that Oliver really wanted to disappear himself and start afresh. And that was the only kind of glitch for me in the book. I just felt that, you know, she loved him so much. He was her brother and she didn't seem to try very hard. But I mean, I felt that was a fair enough
explanation. But there was also the whole extended American, like you were saying, Ava, like in Kalamara, like the way it went was they sent over the price of a flight and the brother or the sister went over. And as time went over the decades, the whole family went over and they were plugged into an entire Irish community who supported them and helped them, whether it was through building or was whether working in the service industry. And there was no sense there was an Irish community there that she plugged into. So for me, that wasn't plausible.
Her strongest relationship was with this woman who was in the same apartment, Wilma. A black woman who had a husband who, and I think her own children, she had, I think was a two, and they helped to rear young Theo, certainly made it easier for her to keep on working and so forth. But wasn't that a plausible enough kind of arrangement? Just human contact. Natural.
That was a lovely, lovely friendship. Yeah. That was one of my favourite. And that's where we felt this very deep emotion. I found myself now moved, finally, by that, apart from the when her mother died. I found that very moving. But that was a lovely friendship, and the fact that she was black was such a contrast to what Tess would have experienced.
It was an incredibly lonely life otherwise. And I wondered whether the book was saying, because I thought the girl, the young Tess, the child, was much more vivid than the adult, which is possibly what the author wanted us, Mary Costello, wanted to think.
It's riven with inaction as well, because there was the
opportunity. With inaction.
Yeah, inaction, because there was the opportunity there for her to go out and visit her sister, who was ill in California. She didn't take that opportunity. It was as if she was standing back from any relationship worth talking about. And there was the earlier passage where there was a wonderfully woven scene of her going into her sister's bed, Claire's bed, at nighttime and being embraced by her sister Claire when she needed it as a child. And that was so warm. And in contrast to that then, when Claire was ill, she didn't actually go to the trouble of flying across the country to see her.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, though, I forget who made the suggestion that the relationship with the son, Theo, wasn't all that plausible, but I thought maybe there was an author that made a lot of sense. He was an adolescent, he rebelled, he reacted in a kind of a nasty way to her affections, as teenagers often do. And then when he got maybe more mature, when he got qualified, got a job, there's a lot of tenderness in the relationship towards the end.
I think, you know, because he was her everything, she did probably smother him slightly with love. but I mean, as anybody would. And I think, so as you say, as a teenager, he was pushing away from that because it was slightly stifling. But he does come back to her in the end. But I know I find that all very plausible, I have to say. The thing about this book is I think it's her life is painfully lonely, but in a way it's very real. You know, she's almost invisible in New York. She's almost like an invisible person. But I think that's very real, you know.
She wouldn't be the first Irish emigrant ever to not come home for many, many years. But towards the end of the book, she does actually return. And here's Mary Costello reading about Tessa's return to the farm.
She entered the orchard, entered a great silence, a farm girl again, scarcely disturbed by time. She walked to the far end and leaned against the wall. The stones were warm, mellow from hundreds of years' sun. She laid back her head, and she was caught by something, the flicker of sky, intimations of eternity, and for one pure moment she was free, and everything was revealed, and everything resolved, and she was being delivered, given her first fleeting glimpse of landfall. A fall of memories loosened, and images of happiness returned. Afternoons with Captain and Mike Connolly, her father in a straw hat in a yellow hayfield, her mother at an upstairs window, Oliver at her breast. The lull of Eden, of ancient perfection. Had this been her destination all along, this return to the source, the starting point, the only place she had ever belonged?
Back home, perhaps after, what, 40 years or thereabouts of an absence from the west of Ireland, I can see why Donal Ryan would write, and it's on the back flap, devastating. Even as my heart was breaking, I couldn't put the book down.
I read it, I think, over two very short sessions. Very lonely place to be in a book, which is a very good thing to say about a book. Then, of course, the other thing at the end, you discover the house is a lot bigger than you thought. I mean,
yeah,
she grows up in this house, like a four-year-old doesn't think about their house, but it's kind of, is it a big house almost? They've sort of taken over from an old landlord.
Yeah. So it's we're not aware of that in the early stages.
That was very cleverly done.
Sean, I think there's a second, I think that there's potential here for a spring-off second novel where she creates the character who is the emigration, the big themes of emigration, love, son moving away, that displacement, that sense of displacement. And I think she does that very beautiful in the end, where she talks about coming home and it's the only place she did actually feel at home.
Yeah, but you think this is going to be some sort of reconciliation when she arrives home, that there's going to be a sudden sunburst. But I think that was, we were all, excuse me, lulled into some sort of illusion there that didn't actually follow through. I think the message of this is that there was a misery in this woman's life that is unremitting.
And yeah, it reminded me a little bit, and I don't know why it came into my mind, if any of you are familiar with that song sung so beautifully by Sean Kane, Kilkelly. It's a kind of a famine song, and everything is miserable, and the guy goes away, and the letters keep coming from home, and the mother dies, and everybody,
I don't regard that as a negative, Sean. I think this is a beautiful book, well worth reading.
And that's a beautiful song, but it is unremitting misery is the story of it.
Well, some people have less capacity for joy than others, I think. And also, life is quite hard on her, you know. From
Was it all down to the beginning? Well, the mother's death. Was it like someone who basically, as a result of this, is alienated from
her life?
And
she had deep psychological problems. Yeah. They stayed with her from childhood right through her adult life.
And the return didn't sort it out, as Gerard was saying. It didn't. There was no big...
No happy ever
but
after.
I thought that was realistic. Yeah.
I would have heard that.
Okay, well, look, that's Mary Costello, Academy Street, and it's published by... Canongate, I think it says. Canongate TV, and it's selling. You can pick it up for about $14.99 on special offer, at least. And beautiful hardback production there. Mary Costello's Academy Street. Packed with emotional intensity, that's according to the Sunday Times. I think everybody around the table would agree. Now, if you want to get a head start on our choice for next month, for the book club next month, we'll be reading The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins, a book that is already being hailed as one of the best of 2015. Stephen King said it kept him up all night. It's been a New York Times and Amazon.com bestseller since its release just a few weeks ago. It's no wonder, as The Girl on the Train is being described as Rear Window meets Gone Girl. It tells the story of Rachel, who gets the same commuter train every day. The train stops at the same signal at the same time. time every day overlooking a row of back gardens. Rachel has started to feel like she knows the perfect people who live in one of the houses. She even comes up with names for them. She calls them Jess and Jason. But one day, while her train is stopped, Rachel sees something shocking before the train moves on again. So for fear of spoiling it, we won't say any more about it, but we'll bring you more information on the book over the coming month. And as always, we'd love to hear what you think if you're reading along with us. You can email todaysor@rte.ie or call us on 01-208-2198. My thanks to our contributors in this month's book club: Sinead Moriarty, author; Ger Colourn, columnist with The Star; Natasha Fennell, director of Stillwater Communications; and Ava Walsh, author and lecturer. And that's our lot for today. Thank you for listening. The